Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Consciousness Podcast. Today I have here Rob Brindad. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you, Sam. Nice to be here.
So I listened to a podcast where you talk about your life. It was the Once Bitten podcast. So it was very fascinating. You have a very inspiring life story. But I was thinking that today here, we will speak more about ideas, concepts, and this. And for those who are interested in your life story, they can go to that Once Bitten podcast. And if we go into concepts, ideas, we just have to make sure that they are never true, right? That what we will speak about here today is just models of what is. Can we just agree on those basics first?
Sure. I suppose I do have models, but I try not to go into models too much. I'm more just deeply observing, but I'll talk about like some of my work. But models, anything to do with the mind, I'm not, is usually based on beliefs, is not nothing I'm interested in, just interested in, truth. But you go into it more and see what you mean.
Yeah, but don't you feel you need models to explain things to people? Like if you want to explain something, you use like analogy or you use examples. Those are models.
Yeah, I do use analogies, especially if I'm trying to get someone to be able to see their mind or see their behavior. However, if I'm working one-on-one with a client and they have a problem or issue, then I'll go, the result is what I'm interested in. So it doesn't matter how they perceive, like it doesn't matter what their belief system is about their situation. All I'm interested in is the resolution or the result. So I don't use analogies too much, except in certain areas of my work.
That's interesting. It's been a big part of what I'm doing. I'm trying to create like analogies because I feel that I have a deeper purpose to spread awareness. And I feel that concepts, analogies is sort of the best way for people to understand. Otherwise, they will stay in their old ways, in their old patterns, and keep on doing them over and over again. So when I write articles, it's basically like, oh, I found a new model, or because it's sort of a similar message, but it's just a new way for more people, for other people to be able to understand something.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. So give me some of your, and I'll give you, because when it comes to like freedom is where, you know, people, let's say for instance, yesterday I had a client who came on a call and said, you know, she's completely depressed and she's completely trapped. And she was so deeply in it. I listened to her for quite a while looking for an access point to her. And then when I could see a pattern in her behavior, so which it's the behavior that is, reaction to all her memories. So when I got that behavior, then I suppose that's when I started to explain to her, look, that traps you. That behavior is like, you think it's keeping you free, but it's trapping you. And so we started to talk more using models and analogies. Yeah. But some of my work, there isn't any. I don't want any, and I don't want them to have any thoughts or beliefs about what I'm doing. But when it comes to freedom, I suppose that's where all my analogies come in, because and people need to understand freedom from their minds, freedom from the known. So I suppose I do have models there. I'm not, talk to me a little bit more about some of the models you use, because I'm interested.
Yeah. So, for example, yesterday I published a new article and I found a new lens. I found a new way to explain something. And I called it then, it's like fiat consciousness. It's when we need to control the external world.
Okay.
And fiat money is like a symbol of this. Well, then you have truth consciousness. And we can have those two. So a person can choose to live in fiat consciousness, trying to control everything. And it's about the surface, you know, like it's about presenting.
Absolutely.
And then you have the truth consciousness then when you're living, you're just authentic from within. And you're not trying to change the external world, but you let the external world sort of play with you. So that's sort of a concept, right? And then
yes.
I'm trying to explain this in terms of Bitcoin and how we can,
yes.
how Bitcoin actually is able to help us, not by just being money, but actually by showing us truth and how we can exist in truth.
Beautiful. Okay, so now I know what you're saying. My brain's just getting warmed up. The coffee's kicking in. So I love that. So I kind of coined the expression, and I think probably someone else has coined it as well, is decentralized mind. So this fiat mind, centralized supplements, or trying to control the monetary system. Or, if I come back to my work when I was at Chelsea, I was a fiat physical therapist or a fiat conditioning specialist, trying to control the way the knee worked, trying to, it was all about conscious control over the body. The body is, we have no idea what's going on in the body. It's so complex, a system of systems. And so I was that. And I was like, yeah, you've got to keep your knee still and pull your belly button in. And then, you know, this is like 25 years ago, I came across this gentleman in Michigan who was a physical therapist, and he worked with Michael Jordan. He was very much sort of an outsider in the physical therapy community, but he's brilliant. And what he taught me was, you want the mind out of the body. You don't want your mind. It's too limited. It's too linear thinking. It's too restricted to be involved in the complex systems of the body. So he would use drivers. So he would say, hey, can you, let's say I'm working on the neck, or I want a particular movement in the rib cage. He said, can you look behind? Can you see that thing behind you? So it's the driver of seeing that then created the cascade of movement, instead of telling the athlete, look, can you move your head up to that point there? So one is driven by the natural postural system, or the natural inputs of the body, and one is an artificial shaping or control of the movement. So that was my early realization that I was way too, call it fiat then. And so with my work, it's been a continual movement, more decentralized. And then when I came across Bitcoin, and that's been a deepening understanding of that truth. But, you know, when I talk with a lot of Bitcoiners, or I have clients, everyone's interested in freedom. But you fundamentally, the root is truth. Truth will set you free. And so what we have is, with Bitcoin, is this base layer of truth. There's no beliefs necessary. It's truth. It's maths. It's, you know, the clock, you know, the time chain, or whatever you want to. Every 10 minutes, there's a block. You can look at it. There's no tampering by the government. But this is... you know, as you know, it's the revolution for me is that we've created something that is truth, that we can build upon. It is gonna, I think I said it's Trojan horse for the mind, because the mind likes to, you know, control. And this thing's come in and it's changing people I don't know what angle you would call it, but it's there and it's changing people. So the thing that truth of Bitcoin is something, you know, I look at, and I don't need to have any beliefs about Bitcoin. I mean, I could believe it goes up in price, but that's not of interest to me anymore. There's nothing for me, you know, I could identify as a Bitcoin maximalist, but I think fundamentally I'm a truth maximalist. I want the truth. And so Bitcoin is perfect, like, for that. You know, back to you, Sam.
Yeah, I saw you commented that on Twitter about truth the other day. It was, what's his name, Breedlove? Breedlove, he said something about Bitcoin and truth. And he said that truth is not possible, achievable. And then you said sort of the opposite, that it's just not achievable with the rational mind.
With the rational mind.
Yeah, but with intuitive mind or with the heart, or what kind of concepts?
I mean, you saying the heart or the intuitive mind, I think everyone... The beautiful thing about self-authority and learning about oneself, and I see this for me, this is my own internal experience, is I see myself or my mind as being a you know, like as Krishnamurti would say, a bundle of memories, and I react to them. And so that has the whole of humanity's conditioning and behaviors in it. So I see that in me. And so if I want to know the truth, if I want to know the truth about something and I use my intellect, and I work with some very, very, very clever, like, you know, known as very clever people, and I work with them, and because they're using their mind, let's say, they want to gain freedom, or let's say they want to optimize their life and be unlimited, because they're using their mind to achieve that, then they will create the opposite, the opposite polarity, and the dual nature of the mind. I see it all the time. And the more rigid a person's mind is, the stronger their mind. So a very, like, for the, I work with some very, you would call them maybe like very good soldiers or elite athletes. They're very, very disciplined. They won't break mentally, but their body will break. So there's this constant balancing, you know, in the mind. So if the truth in that is that there's always another truth, or depending on, you know, hot, cold, is this hot? Well, it depends. I'm in Madeira, this seems hot, but I go to the UK now, this is cooler. So if I want the truth, and I want, if love, if I want, if I say I love you, that it's the self. So love is experienced with complete conscious awareness of everything in the moment. That is love. It's complete, unconditional connection. And when the mind comes in, it just filters that. So I think he said, like Robert Breedlove, I've read a lot of his work. It's amazing. He's very intellect. He's in the intellect. And so he's trying to, for me, and I might be wrong, but it seems like he's trying to experience no mind with his mind. And it's like someone in this, like a fish in the water, trying to experience being out of water. They can't experience it because they're in the water. So it's a kind of like being free in the prison. You can be free in a prison, but you're still in a prison. So that's where I think I was talking about that. You know, you can't experience truth if you're with the mind. And then I observe my work most of the day. I am observing myself, observing this mind And that is what I would call like real meditation, is when you are, you go to your family, you go to your parents, and you're with your parents, or you have children, you're with your kids. That's real meditation, because you, you're connected in a relationship, you're relating to another person, and it will trigger your behaviors and yourself. And that's how you get to know what is in that overall conditioning, so you can observe it. And in observing it, the analogy I would use, the one I used with my client yesterday, you're in the cinema, we're together, me and my client, and she's telling me about this movie, and it's scary, it's horrible. And I say, how do you change the movie? And, you know, you can't go up and change the screen. You'd have to go and look at the, you know, work on the projector. Now, if you try and change using your mind, yes, you can change it, but you're always going to pull in that thing that you're trying to change at some point. And so to change the reel, the movie, you have to observe the images, the behavior on that, you know, reel, without so kind of Wu Wei, effortless doing, without any conscious doing. You just observe the behavior, and in observing, it shines light into darkness, and then that dissolves it. And then you're without that particular bias or drive, if I explain that correctly.
Yeah, so it's like neutrality.
Sure.
And that's the healing force. And
absolutely.
And that's part of the truth consciousness that I said. Like, so in the fiat consciousness, we are constantly striving, like in duality, against something and creating these opposite reactions. Because we have no neutrality there. We are always on one side.
Absolutely.
And I think for people in the fiat consciousness or the fear consciousness, they cannot even imagine how it is to be neutral. It sounds like really, really boring, I think. Like, well, neutral, then you don't fight for anything, then you don't sacrifice yourself for anything, you're a wimp. Like, how can you persuade anyone to be neutral when it has such a negative feel for people in the fear consciousness?
Well, that's a great question. I like the word like shaping, like, the fiat, they try and shape everything. So school kids is shaped. We need to make people good. You know, everything's about shaping and control. And so when neutrality comes from, you can't try and be neutral, right? And so if you say you need to be more neutral, yeah, that's true. But they'll be like, well, don't care. Don't care about the war in Ukraine. Don't care about the abortion bill. Don't care about all this violence in the world. And I mean, that's difficult. I mean, I probably don't, if someone's coming at me at that angle, I'll just say, for thousands of years, say religions or groups have tried to shape humans and to make them non-violent, and it's not worked. It doesn't work. You can't shape. The more you try and shape a kid, the more the kid will rebel. You'll create monsters. The Catholic Church, I mean, this was, there was a debate by, and I think it was Christopher Hitchens. It's a beautiful debate where he talks about, you know, the church, a force for good. Well, unfortunately, because it's such a force for good, it created a force for evil. And we know the truth of that. So I think that's getting people to understand that the more you try and shape things by doing externally, it doesn't work. And so, I mean, I might not be the best, you know, I try, and when I'm talking about that, I'll say the only way that I, me personally, can change my children, change the world, is if I go within and take responsibility for the violence and because I am violent. I am greed. I am anger. I am narcissist. I'm everything. I'm a wimp. I'm a bully. And when I see that out there, I see my three fingers pointing back and I go, okay, if that bothers me, that particular thing on the cinema screen, okay, I observe that. And I take full responsibility in my conditioning, which has everything in. And that's the only revolution. That's the only way we can change the world, is by everyone taking responsibility. And on Twitter, if you want to know what that doesn't look like, it's when you see, I saw a Democrat talking about Republicans and saying, oh my God, they're a cult. And I saw it and I thought, oh, if I just change the Democrat and Republican around, it's exactly, they're both calling each other exactly the same thing. It's just the opposite side of the coin. And the Democrats need to take responsibility of their own behavior, and the Republicans need to do that. But we're so polarized, right, Sam, that I just go within. And whenever I see something that bothers me, I want to know the truth. And the truth is that for me to change something, it has to be an internal job.
Yeah, good. But if you then look at the Bitcoin community,
yeah,
with the people there, and many people talk about truth and freedom.
Yes.
But they're operating in the same fiat consciousness as you're talking about, Republicans, Democrats.
Yes.
And that's just this contradiction, I feel, because Bitcoin is truth. Bitcoin is freedom. But then the people following, they are sort of acting from fiat consciousness, trying to push Bitcoin on the world and trying to win over the central banks. You see what I mean?
Yes. Yes. You're the first person who has said that to me. The fiat consciousness, it's like, okay, let's start. When I'm talking, because I in Madeira, we had this big group that came together. It was a wonderful group of people. It was just a beautiful experience talking to different people. Everyone is driven for freedom. And so they don't like being enslaved. Oh, they don't like, Bitcoiners don't like to be enslaved. However, that in itself enslaves them somewhat. So I think Bitcoin is the Trojan horse to the mind. So it's kind of going in and dissolving. It's a little bit like a psilocybin. When someone's very, a lot of the Bitcoiners are highly, highly intelligent, much more intelligent than I am. And I really enjoy talking to them. Some of them won't see what you're talking about. They're not ready. So you give them some psilocybin and hope that that would dissolve some of the rigidness of their ego and their self and their identity. They identify with their intellect, etc. Bitcoin, I think, is like a psilocybin trip, in that it very slowly it starts to dissolve. You see people talking, well, it's not about me, it's about Bitcoin. It doesn't need anyone. I can see them saying it. However, to see that you are not your mind, to see that we're conditioned and we're a bundle of memories, it's difficult to see that. And so Robert Breedlove, when he was talking to Jeff Booth, and I only saw the first 20 minutes, you could see he was like using his mind. And it's, for me, using the mind to try and understand the non-mind is like you're a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and you find an opponent that's you. So you're just all playing chess with yourself. There's no ability to win. It's just, you just get tied up more and more. So I could see that. But Jeff Booth has some real awareness. I enjoy talking to him. So you're quite right. Bitcoin, there's a lot of people holding this gift, and they're not seeing exactly what it is. But maybe it's going to take time, Sam. It's a very, like, to for that to happen, it takes a lot of work. Or it can be instant, right? That you see, but you have to, I think you have to have a lot of pain to, and then discomfort to go, you know, why am I here? Like, and start to ask those big questions. So it's taken me over 25 years of going, why am I, what's going on? Why, you know, and going down wrong avenues until now I'm at this point, and I've still got a lot, you know, to observe, but I don't, there's no way you can push the Bitcoiners. They can't, you can only work on yourself. And then when you see the Bitcoiners and you see they don't get it, or they're not seeing that they're caught in their fiat minds, even though they're talking about Bitcoin and fiat is trash and everything, you just keep working on yourself. But it's a great point. I haven't heard many people talking about that at all.
Well, yeah, this is actually the purpose of this podcast, is to bring in this awareness into the Bitcoin community. And it turns out that it is many Bitcoiners out there, like yourself, who are considering thinking about these things. And
inevitable.
Yeah.
It is
coming.
One thing you said there, I was thinking about, I have one client who's, you know, he's very angry and he's at war, like at war with the establishment. And he's, you know, someone would class him as a conspiracy theorist. He's way down that rabbit hole. And so he started off going, oh, I'm there, you know, the agenda, this and that, and angry and fit. And then I was like, we started to work. I was like, where's, you know, you're fighting, aren't you? He goes, yeah, this is important. It's for my children and their freedom. And okay. And then I said, so you're angry? He goes, yes. And I said, just let's explore that. And so we kind of went deeper on the anger. I said, and it came out that actually he was scared. Okay. And then we went a little bit deeper and he was helpless. Helplessness and observing that and seeing that we're, you know, going into those themes and exploring that instead of reacting to the helplessness and throwing that energy into the world or into Twitter, you know, and like the wars that are happening are belief wars, right? And I said, the only way you can change that out there is going into this painful stuff yourself, because that's easy. Everyone's doing that. And so but he's not 100% there yet. I still see him a little bit on Twitter, but he is aware that the truth, and this is where we come back to the Bitcoiners, they need to ask themselves, can you shape this reality with your intellect? Or is there something else? Have you really looked at that? Is there a way that we can have a revolution? And it comes through neutrality, like you talked about, because the energy you're shoving out there is just creating the opposite. You know, they're all talking about Taoism and everything. And well, if you're, you know, screaming shitcoin and everything, but I kind of watched that. Maybe you have thoughts on, you know, Bitcoin maximalists. I think people are truth. It's like Corey, I can't remember his surname.
The head of Swan.
Yes. Bitcoin. Mm. Yeah. So I follow him. Yes. And he's just, you know, pushing like this is truth. And, you know, people talk about the immune system and everything. Whenever I get caught up in any, I work on myself, you know, the truth, Bitcoin is truth. And so there's a little bit of people have probably, I've spoken to a lot of people and they're like, I think they're open, and I think Bitcoin's going to cause a compounding effect. And I think that's where the next revolution is going to come in the decentralized mind. So we had, you know, the printing press to the internet, we had centralized monetary control, central banks. It looks like we're moving towards a Bitcoin standard, which would be based on truth. And what that would do, you know, Knut, I'm not very good with surnames, Knut, the author of 21 Million Divided, I was talking with him and he's got all these theories. You know, he's very intellectual and smart. He's coming out, what would that do? I'm not very good at that. But what I do know is if something's based on truth, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I went off on a tangent there. You bring me back, Stan.
Yeah, so let's go back to Krishnamurti, mm-hmm. because I also have a personal history with him. When I started my journey, I met this very special man for a few hours, and he gave me Flight of the Eagle by Krishnamurti. So that was a very special moment, and Krishnamurti has meant a lot to me. So can you tell us a little bit about his story? Because I think it's quite an amazing story. Like,
if you said, Rob, could you meet someone in history? It would be Krishnamurti for me. Before I came across Krishnamurti, I was using a lot of energy medicine, ones and zeros, and I worked with people like a computer, and I still do. And I got, like, the results are absolutely astounding. And I'm not going to go into them, but it was, even now I'm like, is that, how is that possible? But that's more on the medicine or psychology side, et cetera. But there was a few people, like 5-10, that I always held somewhere in the back of my mind that I couldn't, it kept coming back. I couldn't resolve it, and especially addicts. For a year, I was putting it out there. I was like, there's something I'm missing with my model. What is it? And I just was calm about it. And then one day I'd seen, you know, Krishnamurti, I'd seen some stuff before, but I'd never looked at it. And then I think I read Freedom from the Known, or I got the book Freedom from the Known, and I read it in one go. And then I was like, Oh, this is it. This is, so I've got a, hopefully you can't hear that. There's a guy walking past with a leaf blower. That's probably a good analogy somewhere, a leaf blower with Krishnamurti. When I realize one of the things that I'm kind of, I see is one of my skills is knowing when something is good or something is truthful. And so I went fully into it, and I still love listening to him. And so I started to observe my behavior, and his story, which I find fascinating, is he was, I think it was his father and four boys were accepted into a huge estate, which was sort of like a spiritual movement, not maybe a cult, but I can't remember the name of it. And they were brought in if he was to do accounting or some sort of clerical work. And the boys were malnourished and everything. And one day, one of the leaders who could see auras and things, he saw Krishnamurti and said, he's our next leader. So they are a little bit like lamas. They get chosen from a young age to become leaders of the movement. And they, you know, they got him nourished, and him and his brother, they got teachers. And then he went to UK and got, you know, into a very good school and moved in, you know, the aristocracy circles, and started to be trained up to become that, the leader of their group, the leader of their, to sort of be the guru, the authority. And then at a certain point, I think, I don't know if it was through meditation, and I think through the death of his brother, that he realized that any authority, any subjugation to another authority stops learning and makes you brain dead. Like, and the way he says it, I like as well. He's like, you know, that's just, all of this is nonsense. He uses that word in that British accent. And so he kind of abdicated his throne. He said, no, I can't be a part of this, and went off on his own. And from what I gather, and I'm sure there's, you could tell me more about this, is he, in through deep introspection and questioning and observation of his, of how the mind works, he over 70 years, I think he went into his 90s. So 70 years of observation, you imagine the work there. And he was very consistent in his message. And his message is almost like, I kind of said Krishnamurti would have been a Bitcoiner. When I say Bitcoiner, he would have liked Bitcoin because there's no authority. And he was staunch in his protection, like, do not put me on the pedestal. I'm sitting above you so you can all see me. I am walking alongside you. And that is how, in fact, I start all my sessions with clients. They say, we are walking together side by side. I'm not your teacher. I'm not your guru. We're working through this together. You are your own authority. That is how I start all my work. And my webinars, I start that as well. So Krishnamurti boils it down to first principles of, for me, like, it's a de-engineering of our programming. And to change the world, you have to free yourself from the known.
Yeah, so Krishnamurti has been very influential to me also. But my problem was that when I started to be able to see auras and chakras and these things, then his teachings couldn't help me anymore because he's just talking about the mind. So then I felt that I was going on into the, all these different schools because I had to figure out how these energy bodies works and everything. And he couldn't help me with that. But when you come into all these different modalities and techniques like New Age, they are leaders, they are gurus. And it's easy to get sucked into them, like a different technique. So, oh, he has these amazing abilities. So you sort of, oh, I want to be like him. So I always felt that Krishnamurti was sort of holding me down, like, this is the basics. Like, okay, you can go in to check all these things, these different dimensions, but this, just keep this in mind. It's all decentralized and you shouldn't put any leader above yourself. Yeah, so it's been a journey.
That's super interesting. So I came at Krishnamurti after doing the energy work. I spent over 20 years like I said in my story, starting off working with chakras in the football clubs, on very quiet, not talking to, only when a player showed interest, I was doing Tai Chi, Qigong, chakra balancing, Reiki, but exploring. And I was always like, there must be, for me, there was more, there had to be more. And there was a lot of gurus, and incredible how seductive spirituality is to the ego. I've seen real abuses of power by people who are quote unquote spiritual healers, you know. And so I worked through that and then realized that external, like my kind of my, because I work with that now, is we are all computers. We're very much like computers. So there's software programming, there's hardware, the computer, physical body, and then there's spirit, which is like internet connection with stuff coming in. And it gets a bit weird, but I don't care what comes up. There's no drama with my work. It's just resolving things like ones and zeros. So externally, we have this tech. We're talking, my microphone's incredible. I've great quality Yeti, and it didn't cost very much at all. My MacBook Pro is amazing. But internally, we keep going back 2,000 years to see what they did back then when there were no computers. There was no, so they would say healing takes time. But now we have It used to take time to send a message from America to the UK, like a letter would take months. When I was a kid, it would take weeks from Kenya to UK to send an airmail. Now everything is instant. And so I was always like, why can't I get instant and precise results with the work? And so through trial and error and everything, I realized that the words people use create tags with the memories, and I could go into that stuff. But when I came across Krishnamurti, it was after that. And so it fitted in and Bitcoin. And so it's a slightly different to yours, but he came in. And so I hear what you're saying about Krishnamurti, like, physically, he was always blowing, his nose was always dribbling. He had hives. I was kind of like, oh, and I know he had a doctor that massaged him, used acupuncture. Because I wanted to know, what did he think about the physical and the non-physical and a manifestation like Jung of the unconscious in the body? And so the observation work and understanding of my behavior is crucial to healing. However, he was about at the time when there weren't computers. And so we're all on this decentralized blockchain humanity. And I work with people, and people, I don't care if they believe it or not, but I get amazing results when I stop people connecting with other people, when there's programming coming down through the generations of computer that the client doesn't know about. I had one particular client who I may have talked about it before. He had a knee injury and was going to retire, and I was flown in, and within 10 minutes I found that his anger with the medical team for telling him to do the operation when it didn't work was the anger energy was in his knee. And so the moment he realized that, the computer, physical intelligence of the computer, and that was dissolved or resolved, his knee was fine. And then he went on to play several more years and earn several more millions of pounds. So with Krishnamurti, what you just said, I haven't also heard anyone else talk about that. So I appreciate you sharing that. And is there any, like from what I said, is there anything you'd like to share? How do you fit that sort of, he's like Bitcoin layer one, and then the layers 2, 3 fit on top of that, maybe.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So Bitcoin, like the base layer. And then if you are involved with some spiritual practice or something like that, then you're sort of, you have to separate yourself a little bit from the base layer, right? And that's sort of the Lightning Network, because it's still close in contact with the base layer. But then if you go into some other where they're really like controlling and stuff like that, that's like Ethereum or like a shitcoin, because it's sort of cut off from the base layer.
Yeah, yeah, I'm there. Big brains.
Yeah.
And so with the Lightning, and then what I do a lot of observation about exactly what you said, this observation of my behavior and understanding my mind. And then what am I doing when I'm working with clients is it's almost like I spend most of my time being decentralized, completely aware and completely open to reality. Then when I work, and I'm not always like that, like, and show me someone who is always conscious and neutral, and it's very difficult to be like that all the time. Maybe there are people, but then when you work with someone in their mind, in the dualities, that's where a lot of the balancing works. So I work with Tulku Lobsang, who's the head of the Tibetan medical system a number of years ago, and he would talk about chakra being a knot in a particular theme. So there's an imbalance or a lack, there's a polarized or a weakness is what I would call it. Like the energy is not flowing, so it's weak energy, and it creates stagnation. and then a block in the energy, and then congestion, inflammation, infection, infestation. So it depends how long the blockage is there for. And so when you're working with energy work, I think a lot of the time it's you're working inside someone's mind, centralized world, and then getting someone to say, hey, by the way, centralized mind isn't you. You're not that. Most people, you can't just go and tell them that, because they won't. They'll be like, what? It's like forcing a red pill. And so you have to go in and balance out their energy. And people pay me a retainer, because I have one guy who pays me a retainer, a lot of money every month, because he has this pattern where he gets frustration, and then there's a stagnation, a block in a particular organ, and then he'll get cancer. So I worked with him initially on the cancer and found the source of that. And so whenever it starts to build up, I can see it. And then you just clear, you work kind of team viewer on, I can work team viewer on people's computers, and then you clear the block. And it would be better if he did that himself by understanding his behavior, but that's not why he's paying me. He's not interested. He's fully centralized and caught in his story. So, but it's good that he understands that someone can work on his computer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I see every chakra as like a machine, like a system, and it has the possibility to work with infinite energy from its black hole.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a self-sufficient system. Mm-hmm. And then the different chakras have different functions and so on. And what happens when we're born into the fiat society, we are blocking off that black hole. We block off our limitless fuel. Mm-hmm. And instead we are taught to get that fuel from outside.
Yeah.
You know?
Dirty fuel,
and you're stealing it from others, yeah, by different behaviors and stuff like that.
Oh, so interesting.
The process then of self-realization is to rewire every chakra from external fuel, just relax those patterns there, right? And then it finds in the connection into its own black hole, and it becomes a self-sufficient system again, where you don't need anything from the external variety.
Balanced. Yeah.
And then you sort of come to a neutral space. And after that, you can start to, like you do, you can start to team viewer, like you said, because your system is balanced. And then you're able to help someone else to start that process, or to speed up that process. So,
And so I totally agree. It's a rebalancing, unwiring, untying of a knot. And the knots come from fiat shaping. And it reminded me of children. When you have children, they are wonderful, and they're, you know, childlike, and they just want to play and explore, and they learn through play. And then we come along and we say, actually, you need to learn, you've got to stop playing. And we are going to shape you, and you need to be good at this to get there. The monstrosity of the system, if you really look at it. And then these kids survive. Some kids do well because they're linear thinkers and they can memorize. But a lot of kids, I've got some very, very intelligent, clever, wonderful clients who did prison, who were in prison because they rebelled so much. They didn't want to be subjugated. They didn't want to subjugate to authority. And so those shapings affect our energy points, you know, and like I used to do with the athletes and try and make their bodies move a certain way, you just create a problem elsewhere in the system. So like Ethereum, the more you tinker with it, the more you're putting your dirty fingers in it, and it's you have to get the fingers out. You have to get the mind out. You got to get the mind out of the chakras, and allow and work on those themes, the like root chakra, you know, safety and security, then imagine how much safety and security work is going to have to be done on over the last 3 years. I mean, but it's been there forever, right?
Yeah. So if we talked about Krishnamurti there and how he was able to get all this power and money and celebrity status to be the head of this, I think it was called Order of the Star or something like that.
Right. Okay.
And then to just give up all of that because he saw the truth. Right?
Yeah.
What we have here in the Bitcoin community, it's something similar going on with Jordan Peterson. It's like it's this tendency to put him on a pedestal, like that he has all the answers, like he's our chosen one. He's our savior. He has good ideas. And you mentioned on the Once Bitten podcast, you mentioned something about that.
Yeah.
What's your thought about his influence?
When I see Jordan Peterson, I really like him. I love humans and some are assholes. But they've got their own stuff and they're people I can observe my assholeness in myself, by the way. So take responsibility for those assholes. But Jordan Peterson, he's a lovely guy. He's really, you know, obviously intellectually very capable and he's like a black belt with his mind, but he's just going deeper and deeper into the abyss. You cannot find answers using your mind. And I know other very, very, the more intellectual someone is, the more likely they are to suffer from a breakdown. And it's just inevitable. So when I see him, it's so much suffering, I think I said on the podcast. And yes, the people who use their intellect, who are completely caught in the centralized intellect, they put him up as some, you know, he's so capable with his words and he can destroy people with arguments. And but those people are suffering and I work with them. I work with the people that love him and have followed all of his rules and subjugate to him. There's also another John DeMartini. I know people who spent hundreds of thousands doing his books, courses, he teaches them all and they're fascinating. It's knowledge, but knowledge is always limited. And I work with those people. They come to me when they're, you know, they go down that route to save themselves for freedom. Like Jordan Peace said, you know, 15 rules for whatever his rules are. It's like, if you live by these, you'll be fulfilled and happy. Sorry, you're going to get the opposite. DeMartini, I've worked with people who've done all of his stuff. And then it comes to a point where I'm saying, well, because you're in your mind, you're going to create the opposite. You're completely trapped. And they don't like hearing that. And some can look at it and go, oh, fuck, I'm in the prison. I thought I was free, but I'm in a prison created by Jordan Peterson or created by the mind. But sometimes you have to go that way. And then when it doesn't work, when you hit rock bottom and you try and commit suicide, you know, I work with people, a lot of people are suicidal, a lot more than people like to talk about it. Then when they're in that point is when there's so much pain, then they either check out, close the computer down and maybe start again or whatever your belief is, or they go, you know what, this incessant striving for control and, you know, desire for freedom and optimized life and fulfilled life and being happy in this perfect relationships and everything. It's just an illusion. It's not real. And then they go to Bitcoin, you know, or, you know, they realize that that's a trap. For me, I've been there. And that once it's seen, you never go back.
Yeah, it can be seen as if you have this programs that you get from family, culture, schools, career. So you have these really crappy programs that you adapted from the fiat world. And then people like Jordan Peterson, and they're offering basically to add-ons, like add hook solutions to that.
Yes.
Where you add on things on top of the bad programming.
Yes, to try and make it better.
Yeah. But then at some point, you added so much, so, and you just come further and further away from your true self. 100%. So then it's more about removing stuff and going back to the basic, to your original essence.
Absolutely, Sam. You said that perfectly. I would add, I can't say that better. I would just, what pops into my mind was Michael Saylor when he was asked about Ethereum or Bitcoin. And he said, you got to understand when a system is very, very simple system, and it's almost so simple, people overlook it and say, oh, that's old system, it's dinosaur. But it's based on almost, you know, the first principles, and it's truth. Ethereum, he says, is just, it's complicated. They're putting band-aids here and there, and it's growing on a base that's not decentralized. So it's inevitable it will fail, just like all institutions that are built on belief. The church, you know, all government, anything that's built on fiat will collapse. It's inevitable, but anything built on truth or simple system will flourish. So with Jordan Peterson, I kind of, the word that comes up is brutal, because I love, you know, I'd love to roll with him in, because I think his defenses would be acute. You know, working with certain people is like, it's like Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You've got to find a way around the defense system of the mind. And another thing, coming back to the Jordan Peterson, and I was thinking about other clients, it's like that knowledge is built like a skyscraper. It just gets bigger and bigger. And the bigger it is, the taller it is, the more unstable it will become. And so when it collapses, and it inevitably does, because knowledge is built on the mind and fear, like fear mind is coming back to that, it'll collapse. And when it does, they fall deep, deep, deep into depression or whatever, or suicide, or, you know, really go down. And my life is now all I do. I'm not trying to, I love listening. What you've said is wonderful, and seeing it from a different view. And I'm just here to I call it de-engineer that building until there's nothing. So when you said at the start, what are your models? I'm like, oh shit, maybe I don't have any. Like I try not to have any concepts and models, but in talking, actually I can really relate to what you're saying. And it's been very refreshing, because I've been looking for people to talk with about the stuff that you've been saying. So I knew this call would be like that. I was saying, I'm going to learn so much from this call. I said that to my wife. So that's true.
Well, the concepts, they're like mental bridges that we can use between humans to sort of connect. But I want to go back to, in my article I published yesterday, I write that we have three layers of truth. So you talked about the truth there, and Bitcoin is one of them. So that's what we can agree about, that one. Then the other one, second one, is the physical reality, like nature, things, a physical body. It does exist by truth. Itself without right. the mind, right? So it's a truth layer. And then why I was thinking about this is because when you said about this team viewer, because I can see the underlying base layer of creation, I call it. So mm-hmm. It's the energy strings, everything, the energy body, the chakras, the connections between people. right? And that's the base layer. That's the truth. So those three layers, that's sort of like when I meditate, I can just let go of old filters. I don't need them because I'm not talking to anyone. And what happens then when I let go of old filters, I just see things how it is. If mm-hmm. I open my mind, if I open my eyes, I see the physical reality. Inside, I see the reality, the truth layer. Can you relate to these?
Sure, sure. Yeah. Do you want me to?
Yeah, I don't know what to say, but it's just I try to align my life with these three layers. And everything else is just models or mental constructs.
Right.
That's where I relate to what you said in the beginning. Oh, should we use concept? Because you are more referring to life as these layers of truth.
Right. But difficult to relate to other people because they're like, how do I get there? Or what? And so we use stories, is what you were saying, to bridge between them so that people can start to see them, I suppose.
I think it needs to start as a mental construct. Sure. It's like an aura around me.
Yeah.
I see it almost like left hand, right hand. It's like imagination with the left hand. So you imagine something like, imagine energy flowing from the earth up. And then you take your right hand, and you can actually feel it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're observing with your... So you move forward like with a model, and then you check, is it true? And it's almost like crawling. It's sure. Crawling yeah. Like in reality, and like making models and then see, is it true? And step by step like that.
Yeah, the true things, I mean, I think everyone sees or experiences reality differently. So I used to be very like, I feel the energy, not so much see it. I can like, I'll just be going along and I have this sort of, I'll be like, I can check on the energy lines and everything, but it mine's more of a felt sense of the information. When it comes to the truth, I use that energy to get to the truth. Like if someone says to me, oh, just make something up like, oh, my boyfriend doesn't love me. And so that's a statement coming from their mind. So then I'm like, well, I'll use an emotion to pin that untruth. If that was the truth, it would have resolved. Okay, so that I write it down. This I'm just telling you a little bit how I work. And so
yeah, that's great.
And then I say, so how do you feel about that? I'm like, sad. Right? So I write sad. I could ask out of 10 if I really want to be anal about it, like how much out of 10 is the sadness? But I say sadness. So then what I do is I find the truth by using this internal GPS felt sense, like
resonance.
Yeah. But there's going to be so I'll use strong or weak like a door. So for me, this is how I do it. So strong energy is like I can't go through that door. Or weak energy, the door opens and I feel the drop. So you can like with Qigong, hands face outwards weakens you, hands face inwards strengthens you, one and zeros. And then I'll go do do do, and I actually it's. For instance, this is coming from your dad and his mum, or it could be anything. Okay, it could be absolutely anything. And so the moment I tell them, on some level, we're connected, that starts to resolve. Some people like me to tell them it, so that you know, because they think they have to hear it. But in some level, it's like Neo and Morpheus meeting in that space. But that's deeper. But for now, let's just say, okay, actually, it's not that he doesn't love you. You're just connecting with your dad and his experience with his mum or something. The moment if that is the truth, instantly I say, okay, let's go back to that thought that was true. my husband doesn't love me. I can't remember what I said. And then I say, how's the sadness now? And it's gone. So the way I know that that they've connected with the truth is that the emotion is gone. And so that when you're working with people, if someone wants to speak to me, I'm like instantly like, I don't talk to you before the session, because once you open your mouth, I'm going to be finding the truth. For instance, I worked with this woman. She had diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. She had it for years. None of the psychiatrists could help her, blah, blah, blah. And so on the first session, I said, okay, how do you feel about having this or something? And she goes, I'm devastated. It limits me and everything. So within 3 minutes, 4 minutes, I found the truth. I resolved it. I told her. And then that session took 50 minutes. The next session, the week after, because she wanted another one, I didn't need to have another one, but she wanted another one. I said, how's your post-traumatic stress disorder? And she goes, oh, no, that's gone. I want to talk about boys. And I wrote that on a forum somewhere, and all these psychologists said, that's terrible. She's in denial. You're facilitating her. She needs years of healing. And I know her now. I speak to her. She's never come back. She knows what, you know, she couldn't sleep at night. It's all gone. So when we find the truth, it resolves it instantly. So you being able to see it is a skill set. You know, maybe if I did a massive dose of psilocybin, I would probably see a lot more of the connections. But my skill set is more this one and zero. Yeah.
But I see it as our inner senses, you know, and some have stronger sight.
Absolutely.
Some have stronger smell. And then we just use, you know, what is available and what works.
And what works. And then if we're coming back to this truth thing, when I get people who come to me and say, I work with a spiritual healer, and they said, I'm cursed and I'm like an old soul and da, 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 you know, and all of this identification, ego. So I said, well, has that resolved your problem? And they go, well, no. I said, well, that's not it then. So the wrong answer is dangerous. And there's a lot of wrong answers out there. So again, it comes back to the truth cuts. We're kind of truth, you know, I don't want to call truth maximalists, because that's kind of an identity. But fundamentally, it's all about finding the truth, and the truth will set you free, you know?
Yeah. And for me, it's about seeing, looking, and to keep on looking, even if it feels bad, because you just see through that barrier and then you see it deeper, and absolutely, then it's restored to its original essence.
Absolutely. And then that energy, neutral energy or black hole or zero point, or that's where the energy is. I like the sunlight. That's another thing, light. I'm in Madeira. I moved here for the light. And I go, like this morning, I go out in the light and I connect and stand in nature by the trees and everything, because it's just so beautiful. And I enjoy doing that. And my body loves the light. I spent a lot of time before on the computer, and when I don't do that, and social media has its own energy, and I work with people, and oftentimes social media energy is weakening them. So I don't know how you experience that in terms of the energy fields there, but it's a unique experience, right? In the last 20 years, that everyone is connected to this environment where everyone's slinging their untruths and weaknesses, and it's compounding. How do you deal with that? What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, it's like fear consciousness. And if you go back to this, it's like, so truth consciousness doesn't really exist there. So it's like a sea of fear programming.
Yeah.
So I go in there sometimes knowing that, it is what it is.
Yes.
You know, I try to find other people like-minded people in that sea. And then when I find them, we can go out of that sea and relate like we are doing here.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit like fishing, I guess. You sort of put down the fishing rod
in a sewer. Yeah. People don't like, there's blue light, you know, from computers, and then there's infrared, different lights. I work with people who they're really affected, let's say, by Instagram. It depends on the social media platform. We just have to realize that there's this energy. Most people still think, you know, it's physical, right? But everything we're talking about is non-physical, and that's where the truth is. And truthfully, I always find it difficult to get, but, you know, like this table is energy just vibrating at a different frequency. I find that difficult to get my head around, but all my work is done within this office, or I call it almost like a dojo, internal dojo. And people think that I'm just walking around mindless. Well, I am mindless, but I'm doing my work internally, and that's my realm. And it sounds like that's your realm.
Yes. For you to be able to work like that, and for you to be able to detect the truth, like you said, like weak and strong, you really need to be in a no mind state, because otherwise you would just project your previous experiences onto the clients. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like maybe when you started, did you have that, like, oh, sometimes your model comes up and you sort of judge a client from past experiences, but then you realize when you do that, it doesn't lead to good.
You know, absolutely. And you have to be neutral to the outcome. So it used to be like, oh, what if they don't change? What if they think I'm, you know, like this, many years ago, a guy called me, he worked with me, and then he was around a group of people in Asia who knew me and had worked with me. And he said to them, yeah, I never worked with him, but he's a fraud. So, and they liked me and they were clients, and he called me a fraud. And at that time that bothered me. So I, you know, obviously worked on that, but it turns out he was defrauding one of them and was the fraud. So that was a projection. So it was a learning experience for me, but also it bothered me. So I had to observe that. So there's a lot of internal work getting neutral to clients. And like I had a client whose husband was cheating and, you know, on her, and so I had to be not on her side, just completely neutral to the outcome, and in doing that they're together again. But I never said, oh, don't worry, I'll make sure you get back with him, or that you'll get a great divorce. It's nothing. I'm like, I have to be completely neutral.
Can't do it, right? Then it doesn't
completely
work.
Otherwise it doesn't work.
Because it's a truth consciousness. It's not the duality. So you can't take a side.
It's a decentralized mind. There's no duality. Absolutely. But that, you know, and I don't drink or, you know, very, very rarely. When I have a session, I prepare myself, you know, I mean, maybe that's the same for everyone, but I'm, you know, serious about my prep for a session so that I am neutral. Otherwise, that's not taking responsibility and it's not truthful. So it's a fascinating area.
Yeah. Now when you said this about preparing and taking responsibility, I was thinking about this, and I actually put it in my article also, that internal control versus external control. So it's like in the fiat consciousness, we try to control things on the outside, but we are quite sloppy in the inside, right? It's just all over the place. So the shift, then, it's not like we get rid of control, but when we move control inwards, so we are disciplined, we are centered, we do our best all the time. That's control, right? But the result is freedom on the outside.
Yeah, and the word that can be like, I would be careful with the word, and I know you know this, the word control, because if I was to tell some of my clients that, it would be they'd be, okay, yeah, I can, I'm going to control myself. And they, and so, and the word also, and that's a Krishnamurti, he had something very interesting to say about discipline, is if a snake, you know, his analogy of a snake, if a snake came in this room right now, and let's say my children or just me were here, I would be acutely aware of it. And I wouldn't let it, I wouldn't just kind of go, oh, it's a snake, and then look elsewhere. I would be like absolutely consciously aware of that snake in my room, right? And same with you, especially if it's poisonous, right? Even so. And so when you are absolutely aware and conscious and understand the importance of knowing yourself, you are disciplined. So discipline is like a one and a zero for me. You're like, are you disciplined or not? Like, are you doing it or not? Are you conscious or not? Are you serious or not? And so I'm serious about understanding myself, getting to the truth. And it wasn't always that way, but I am now, and especially having children, and I need to be neutral about it. So, you know, obviously it's a tough one when you're a parent, is I don't want them getting my conditioning. I will shape them, but without shaping them. You know, you can't not shape someone. So if you completely unconditionally love them and there's no fiat fingers in trying to control them, you are shaping them, but it's, you're allowing them to shape themselves. It's like allowing the flower to blossom.
But is it not also that you sort of try to let your guard down, like to let the discipline drop? And you can sort of get the feedback from reality. So it's also, it's not like you're just disciplined because it's the right thing to do. And it,
no,
but it has a effect. So like you, when you become sloppy, everything starts to be chaotic.
Yeah, you get a real, and I've done that so many times. Well, the mind is such a seducer. It's the best trickster, right? Like you said, you're not disciplined yourself because you want to get better, because that's the mind. So this is a real subtle area, but I totally agree with you. Why are we so serious about knowing the truth? Is, well, if a snake came into my room, I'd be serious because there's threat there. There's danger. For me, my behaviors are a danger to my freedom. Like one of my behaviors I became aware of, I would daydream about being a UFC fighter, like being this powerful athlete, being the shit out of everyone, like admired and recognized. And initially I thought, oh, it's just like a Netflix thing to distract myself. But then I realized actually this is dangerous. It's not allowing me to observe my helplessness and my vulnerability and my weakness. And it's almost like I'm taking a heroin shot. And so that felt so good, like just let yourself go and get into this fantasy. And now I see that is actually dangerous. It's people might go, geez, Rob, you're uptight. No. I want the truth. I want, I'm interested in freeing myself from all my behaviors that control me and make me suffer. So when you see that, it's like, you know, whenever I have that, it doesn't really come up anymore because I've observed it and it's dissolved it. So now I don't have this thing, and helplessness isn't really at the moment something I'm, you know, it's not that thing that it used to be. So I'm freer from it. Yeah.
I think it's probably a normal progression that when you start resolving some of these, like 10 and then 50 and then 100 and 200, you know, you start seeing a pattern that whatever I want to control, it has a cause, it has a root.
Yes.
So it's just quite natural that you just want to continue to.
And it has that compounding, it becomes a habit. A habit of observation. And so for me now, like my wife, a couple of months ago, no, maybe a little bit more, she was I'm not sure if I'm doing this observation right. Am I observing? That's something a lot of my clients will say, in fact, nearly all of them. And now when I talked to her yesterday, she's like, I'm observing it. There was no, I'm not doing it right or wrong. So it's whatever has happened, she's learned that for herself. So it's very freeing when you realize that there's no separation from your external. Everything is one. There's no separation. And when you realize that, you can no longer point at someone and go, oh, what? You know, it's very freeing. And Jeff Booth said that as well when I was talking to him. That's something he said. So that surprised me. It's nice hearing someone having that level of awareness.
And very nice to hear from you here in this podcast. I want to thank you very much for taking the time. It's been great to have you here. I hope we meet in the future.
Sam, I knew when I came on this, I was going to learn a lot. It's been an absolute pleasure. And like you said, I hope we maybe meet in the meat space one day, but hopefully we'll be talking again soon.
Yeah, Madeira.
I'll see you here.